This season of Here I Am with Shai Davidai is dedicated to the memory of my grandmother, Savta Lea Davidai, who passed away earlier this year. A devoted Jewish-Israeli Zionist and lifelong educator, Savta Lea embodied the principles of dialogue, moderation, and love. Here I am with Savta Lea in mind. We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
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 With Shai Davidai.
This episode of Here I Am with Shai Davidai is sponsored in part by Iron Dome Coffee. Iron Dome Coffee gives back 18% of every purchase to organizations helping Israeli society. Visit irondomecoffee.com and use the code Here I Am for an exclusive discount just for our listeners. All right, so before we start, I want to thank all our Patreon supporters who are watching this live. And this is the beginning of our season 5, so thank you all for watching. My next guest is a modern Orthodox Jewish creator with over 1.5 million followers on different social media platforms, where she discusses Jewish life, Jewish thought, and Jewish food.
Yeah.
And she is the author of an upcoming debut cookbook called Eat Jewish, over 100 recipes that blend Jewish heritage, modern flavors, and family traditions. And here I am with the real Melinda Strauss.
Not the fake one. I get that a lot. So yeah. I figure I'll put that in there. It's nice to be here.
It's great that you're here. And we've been talking already. Mike came on, so people be like, we're all chums.
Oh, yeah.
But we actually don't really know each other. This is great. This is what this podcast is about, getting to know people live and, you know, on record. Melinda, I'm going to start with the question that I ask everyone. Melinda Strauss.
Yes.
What kind of a Jew are you?
I'm a proud and loud and use my voice to teach people about Judaism Jew and to help people feel proud of their Judaism Jew.
Proud, loud, and use your voice. And you do use your voice. And you have, throughout the years, created an incredible platform for your voice. Tell me about that. How do you reach so many people? 1.5 million is basically, you know, a small country.
It's a lot. It's a lot of people. And it actually started almost 15 years ago, like pre-TikTok, pre-Instagram. I don't even think Instagram was a thing when I started my food blog in 2011. And I'm a yapper by nature. I love to share by nature. Like, I think that's my gift, is just being able to share things and use my voice. And if I like something, I want to share it with you. So it started with food. I was just sharing recipes, like anything that I was playing with in the kitchen, I was sharing it. And over time, that builds and people start watching. At first, it was just my family. You know, at the beginning, like I always tell people, when you start, nobody's going to be listening. But keep talking, because eventually people will start listening if you've got something important to say. So I would share tons of food, and I wasn't specifically, everything I do is kosher, but I wasn't just sharing with a kosher audience. I was just sharing recipes that I loved. And over time, it built, and I started building a community of other Jewish people, and they were bloggers too. And we built this incredible community. I started a conference, which I don't even do anymore. And for me, it's just always about like people, connecting with people, helping them grow. They help me grow. It's like a whole thing like that. But then with TikTok, that's kind of where things went from having like a small following on Instagram and Facebook, which I used to use. And that when COVID hit, and all of a sudden everybody was on TikTok, because what else were they doing? They were just sitting there like scrolling, and people were starting to post. I'm like, I could do that too. And my daughter was pretty young and she wanted to get on TikTok. So I was that mom who said yes, which sometimes I look back and I'm like, why did I say yes to that for her? But it got me on TikTok, because I know moms who are not on TikTok and they let their kids. I'm like, you should probably be on that platform and like see what they're watching. And because I was on, I always think of, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk. So he always gives that advice, like get on every platform. Just share everywhere. You never know. So I started sharing just like random thoughts on TikTok. And people would ask me questions about being Jewish, because I would always mention something, you know, it's my life. I live my life every day by my Judaism. So I would just talk about all that.
But how do you go from
We really jumped into the deep water here. Because how do you go from Jewish kosher cooking to, let me tell you about my Jewish life on TikTok?
So it didn't, I started answering people's questions. That's really how it happened. I had no intention of being a Jewish educator ever, actually. Like, it just wasn't even a thought that, I wouldn't have said no to it, but I just never thought about it. But I would share a recipe, or I would share, I don't know, like, it was, I had so few followers. I was just sharing random stuff. And people, I would mention, like, okay, I'm going to be off for Sabbath. And people were like, what's that? Or I would be eating kosher food and they'd be like, what is kosher? And I grew up in an Orthodox bubble where I just assumed everybody knows these things. And I grew up in a small community in Seattle. Like, it's not some huge Jewish community, but I just assumed everybody knows what those things are, Jewish, not Jewish. And then everyone was like, what's that? Wait, there's still anti-Semitism? That was a huge one. Was people thinking anti-Semitism stopped after the Holocaust? And this is almost, what is it, 6 years ago that I started on TikTok. And I would just answer their questions because I'm like, well, they're curious and I can answer them. So I just did. And that's what built it, was this Q&A style. I wanted people to feel comfortable. I would always say to people, there are no stupid questions. Like, if you put a comment in, you're like, I know this is stupid, but I'm like, that is not stupid. Because if you're thinking it, other people are too. So I would answer, like, does your dog need to keep kosher? Which is one of my favorite questions, because I love to talk about my dog. And it's these questions people think are stupid, but they're not.
Like, does your dog need to keep kosher?
He does not need to keep kosher. Okay. I don't bring, like, bacon treats into the house, but he doesn't need to keep kosher. And if he's out, give him a bacon treat. He's not Jewish. It's cool.
So, and how do you know when you get questions that were coming from a good place and not from a, you know, gotcha or trying to demean you?
Yeah. I don't care. Like, if they're trying to demean me, I will always stay above the line. That's my thing. Like, and I will get compliments on it as well. Like, thank you for not talking down to them. Thank you for, like, flipping the switch on them, because they were trying to make something anti-Semitic and you will actually turn it into education. I believe that a lot of hate just comes from a lack of knowledge. Some people just hate. Some people hate Jews and they know us, and that's a them problem. But a lot of people just, they don't know. They don't know anything about us. So they hate us because they hear that we run the banks and we run the media and that we run everything. So they don't know any different. So I started... I always keep that in mind. Like, if somebody's asking a question, whether it's coming from a place of hate or not, somebody out there is going to watch the video and they're going to learn something, even if it's not the original person who commented that thing.
So you go from, well, not, you didn't change, you added, but you started with Jewish cooking, kosher recipes, and now it's almost like a hub for all your Jewish knowledge needs.
Exactly. Like, I didn't want to take away anything. And that was a big thing also. I don't like to think that I switched from Instagram to TikTok, because I still post on Instagram every day. And I love the family that I've built there. Like, I would never leave that behind. And they're so different. Like, I feel a different connection with people on different platforms, right? So I never left anything behind. I never leave food behind, ever. And to me, it's also just a part of teaching people. When people can make latkes and not just make the food, but understand that it's okay to make the food. How many non-Jewish people ask me, is it okay if I make challah? Please make challah. Please eat it.
Wait, so young Jewish people ask you?
No, non-Jewish people.
Oh, non-Jewish people.
Yeah, is it okay if I make challah? And I'm like, yes, please.
Well, but that's an interesting, why do you think that question, where does that come from?
I think they're afraid. I think that a lot of people are afraid to step on other people's toes in other religions and, or in other cultures even, because—
as a sort of cultural appropriation.
Correct. And
interesting.
I just believe that all of it is meant to be shared. Food especially brings everyone together of every culture. I mean, with this, with not just with Jews that have been in the diaspora around the world, right, that we take food with us wherever we go, but all people. If you're moving from anywhere in the world to somewhere else, you're going to bring your culture with you, and then you're going to mix it. And people sometimes get offended if you take an Italian thing and you add something to it that isn't Italian. I'm like, just enjoy mixing the combinations. You want to add, I don't know, curry to your some Italian dish, enjoy it if it tastes good to you. I feel like it's what brings us all together. And we shouldn't be saying things like, well, that comes from that place, so you shouldn't be eating it, which we as Jews deal with a lot.
And obviously, when you have such a big platform, you have a diverse audience. Mm-hmm. But are there certain characteristics? Like, who is your audience?
I think about this a lot because I have no idea. It's people who are curious, for sure. Like, the ones who stick around, Jewish and non-Jewish. Because my platform actually on TikTok started as mostly non-Jews. because they had no idea about the things I was answering. So they were coming to ask questions about Judaism. And then, you know, with more followers comes more people. And then suddenly more Jews were following, religious Jews, non-religious Jews. Like, I've had people who are not religious who are thanking me for teaching them something about Judaism. And I have people who are ultra Orthodox, Hasidic, who are on Instagram or TikTok, which always makes me giggle a little bit, right? Yeah. But they'll send me messages thanking me. Like, I've been doing this my whole life and I never thought about why. And I love the why. I've been taught my whole life to ask questions, not so that you'll go against it, but just so you'll understand what you're doing and you'll believe in what you're doing. You know, sometimes in Judaism, we do things or we choose to do things even though we don't get an answer, right? God doesn't always tell us in the Torah why to do something, but when we believe, we do it anyways.
In fact, you know, there's the idea of Na'aseh v'Nishma, which is first we'll act and then we'll hear why.
Yeah. But I believe in the why. Like, sometimes people go their whole life just acting and they never think about why they do it. And I love the why so much.
So what have been some of the most interesting questions that you've received about Jewish life? What are some of the misconceptions or just things that people don't know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I mentioned the kosher dog thing. It always brings me joy. A lot of it comes down to, especially with food, is people being afraid to talk to Jews, to ask Jews questions. Again, if they can actually make our food, are we allowed to say the word Jew versus calling someone Jewish, which is a pretty controversial topic, I think, for Jews. Many will say no. I think that it's fine and it's our word and it's beautiful and use it as long as you're using it appropriately and not just going to my page and writing Jew, which some people do as well. And I'll use that as education because I love that part. Some crazy questions. I definitely think the ones related to animals are the ones where I'm always like giggling the most from them, because in my head, like, he's not Jewish, he's just an animal. But I get everything is a mystery, everything we do to people. You know, and especially when it comes to religious things, like, I don't cover my hair, but I'm still an Orthodox Jew. So I get a lot, like, daily questions about why I wear pants, why I don't cover my hair, how can I call myself Orthodox? Sometimes they're positive, sometimes they're negative questions and people judging, but I'll still answer them.
You actually had a video recently of you and a friend, a modern Orthodox friend, who, and I think that's the point, looks or dresses very differently than you. And you say, I'm modern Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm also modern Orthodox. And you dress completely differently. So how do you explain that to, you know, not even just to non-Jews? How do you explain that to Jews as well? You know, we have our set conceptions of what a Jew looks like, what a Reformed Jew looks like, what a conservative Jew looks like, what a Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox. How do you explain those things?
It's all a choice. That's really my biggest thing, is no matter what rules we have for us, it's always a choice. I don't even actually always explain why I make the choices I do, because I don't want other people to make their choices based on mine. I don't want somebody to uncover their hair or not cover their hair because of my reasons. I want them to make the choice for themselves, but to understand that it is a choice. And when it comes to Orthodox, because that's, you know, I also feel that there's a lot of people, my dad included, who actually hate all the terms, hates them. You're observant, you're not observant, just be what you are. I use the terms mainly for educational purposes because it is confusing for people. They watch movies and they see what an Orthodox Jew looks like, and it's always Hasidic, right? It's always ultra-Orthodox. It looks a certain way. Most of the time it's somebody leaving or ultra-Orthodox because of something that happened. Like, they don't see that in between. I had this epiphany. I'm invisible to
Netflix, people. According to Netflix, Jews are either Stissel or Fauda.
Correct.
There's nothing in the middle.
Nothing in between. Or it's people who, right, people who hate where they are, so they leave it, which is their favorite thing to feature. And there's so many of us who are happy where we are, and we're choosing it for ourselves. And so for me, Orthodox is, some people don't like that I say this, but to me, it's a belief. We don't want to change the Torah. We don't want to change the law. We follow the laws of Shabbos and keeping kosher and family purity. Those are kind of like the top three. And nobody's perfect, right? So, and that was the beautiful thing when I made this video with my friend, and she at the end was like, but work on yourself. Like, if you're going and you're judging me for not covering my hair, and you got some work to do in the mirror. Like, look at yourself. You're not perfect either. I lose my mind about people who make those choices. Like, you'll go to shul every week with somebody who is stealing from the government or cheating on their spouse or doing other things that they shouldn't be doing as a Jew. But then you'll kick someone out of the community because they're gay. Like, why are you the one who gets to choose what's right or wrong as an Orthodox Jew? Especially when the belief is there. Like, I have a lot of friends who are gay, who are Orthodox, and they still believe in everything. It's just who they're with. Like, it just drives me crazy when people decide that's what makes you less Orthodox. So you can cheat on your spouse, but if I don't cover my hair, I'm not Orthodox.
So, you know, a lot of people, especially in the past 20 months since October 7 and the quote-unquote surge in Jewish identity, they want to be a resource for others. Mm-hmm. They want to, it doesn't have to be on social media, they want to be a resource for their colleagues, for their friends, their neighbors. But I hear from a lot of people that they're afraid because they're worried that they don't know. They don't know enough. They right. don't know a lot about their Jewishness, about Judaism, about Israel, about Zionism, mm-hmm. about anti-Semitism. Do you have a process? Like, once you get a question, like, how do you get to answer?
I look things up all the time. I don't know everything. And I don't want people to ever feel like they have to know everything in order to educate. But do your research. Ask a rabbi if you have a question and you're not sure what the answer is. I have people that I reach out to when I have questions. Actually, in my cookbook, I have a section where I have resources because I use them all the time. I go to Aish. I love Aish. I think they're amazing. I go to My Jewish Learning.
Can you explain what Aish is for the audience?
Well, say like with these websites, with Aish or any of these NC, like, I don't even know, the OU.org, any of these websites are resources where you can get information about keeping kosher, about the Torah, about all the history, like Chabad.org. Every single one of these websites is a resource for people to learn about Judaism. And they're also for community. Like if you're trying to look for a community in your area, like you can go on these websites and you can look and see what's right for you. But I love that they explain every holiday. I'm telling you, you can Google anything and you can find it. I understand for people that it's scary to Google because Google also has a lot of misinformation, which is why I prefer certain websites where I know I'm going to get great information. So like myjewishlearning.com is an amazing resource. And it's not just for Orthodox people, right? Some of them are like very focused on Orthodox answers. My Jewish Learning, I find that they explain things in such a beautiful, simplified way. Everything doesn't have to be complicated. There's a lot of complicated in Judaism. And we have 500 billion holidays. I forget stuff every year. Right. That's why every year my shul does, or temple, synagogue, I'll put the English in for these, but every year the rabbi speaks about the holiday and all the laws. People forget yearly.
Interesting, because the word shul comes from German for school, mm-hmm. right? It's if people forget that, you know, a word for synagogue, yeah. at least in the Yiddish language, it's where you learn, yeah. not necessarily where you pray.
And it really is the fact that we're always learning. I learn from every video that I make. And I don't ever, like, I won't pretend that I know it. I'll read right from the source while I'm making the video because I want people to understand it's not all up here. I do have a lot of knowledge. I grew up religious. I grew up in the community. And again, I grew up asking questions. But, and my dad also, like, he's a huge resource and he loves to share and teach. So I got that from him. But you could find so much information online and ask questions. Like, if you're not sure, that's why I love when people ask, because if you're not sure, it's okay. Like, it's okay to realize that you don't have the answer for everything. If you have a coworker that wants to learn more about Judaism, you don't have to answer every one of their questions if you don't have the answers. It's okay to say, I don't know. And then to say, let me look it up. This is a big lesson for teachers, right? Like, I would rather have a teacher who says, I don't know, than make things up. And then what?
Has there ever been a question that you just could not answer?
Could not answer? I don't know. I actually really have to like go back and look if I have anything saved where I just never did it. I will say that there are certain things that I won't answer without my father. I'd rather save it and let him answer it. He's great with Jewish history. So anything related to Israel and our history, I love when he answers those because his knowledge, like it just stays up there so well for him. My grandfather was the same way that if I want to share with people, we made a video about this, all the names through time of the land of Israel. Because it's been through a lot of names, right? And who was in charge at the times when they changed all these names, we made a video about that. I'm like, I'm not going to be the one to do that. Because it didn't feel right for me to be that resource. Because I felt like a fraud because I didn't have everything. So I went and asked my dad because I knew that he would know.
What about questions that you refuse to answer?
So I don't like to talk about why I don't cover my hair. Like I don't like to actually, because I have answers. I don't just make the choice because I'm not in the mood to cover my hair. But like I said before, I just don't want people to make their decision based on mine. So something like that, I just won't answer.
Is there a question that you would find offensive, wrong, unacceptable?
Nope. Ask away. If I hate it, I just won't answer it. But I'd rather you ask the craziest thoughts that you have rather than just like keep it inside and pass judgment.
So now let's switch for the other side, right? Because for any question, any conversation, there's the person answering the question, mm-hmm. but then there's the person asking the question. And we just had this right before we started recording of asking a Jewish woman, or I guess a Jewish man, if mm-hmm. you're a woman, are you Shomer Negia? Do you, what would be the translation? Do you keep?
Well, Shomer Negia means to watch, touch, right? Yeah. So for religious men and women, it's that they don't touch someone who isn't their spouse or their children.
Right. And a lot of people are afraid to even ask because it creates an awkward situation.
Sometimes.
So how do you get people to feel comfortable to ask questions that are complicated, that are sensitive, and that they show their lack of understanding?
I think it starts actually with the person who's answering it and teaching them about sensitivity and being thoughtful and being caring. If you walk up to somebody and say that you want to shake their hand and they, let's say, don't shake hands, they have a choice to make. They can either say, no, thank you, and set boundaries for themselves, but do it respectfully. You know, hey, I really just don't, you know, and not be like, oh, I'm Shomer Negia, I don't touch men. I don't shake hands with people. And that's totally acceptable these days, especially since COVID. Like, not everybody shakes hands. It's okay to say, I don't shake hands and be respectful about it, or just to shake the hand, which is something that we're actually taught, is that you don't want to embarrass somebody else. So if somebody goes to shake your hand, shake it back. I've seen rabbis who have hugged people. No, they don't do the hugging. They're not the ones initiating, but someone will go in for a hug and like forget who they're hugging. And I've seen rabbis who will just do the quick hug and then move back because they don't want to embarrass the person. Not everyone's like that. And I think it starts there with us and being more sensitive to not embarrassing other people, because that's where so much of that embarrassment comes from. But also just teaching people, what is Shomer Negia? People don't even know it exists. So how could we expect, especially as a religious person, that someone's going to understand not to shake someone's hand? Like, you're amazing that you ask, but, and I was like, this is so fun because I don't even think about people asking that question. So it's teaching people about our laws, or even this is a great one because, you know, the Shabbos goy term?
Yeah.
So with
goy shel Shabbat.
Yeah. It's somebody who's not Jewish, who's able to do something for you on Shabbos if needed, right? If, I don't know, everybody's house is different, but let's say somebody, you know, forgets to turn off the light in their fridge and they need someone to help them with it, and they'll go ask their neighbor or infer to their neighbor.
In Israel, a lot of hotels would have a non-Jewish employee mm-hmm. On call on Shabbat, you know, if you're stuck in an elevator, turned off the light accidentally, stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah. And these days, because of TikTok, because of how much we all share, because there's a whole community of us doing it, there are so many people who are like proudly Shabbos goyim. They're literally like, I'm your Shabbos guy, because they know without being asked. Or I've had people tell me that the nurse or doctor in the hospital, they'll see someone who's religious and they'll know to ask questions because they've learned from our videos to ask the questions in the first place. And that's a really big deal. Like, I remember when I gave birth to my son, who's now 17, and I was in the hospital for Shabbos because I had a C-section, and they had the TV on, they had the TV off. Like, they never even thought to ask me if that was something that I was okay with. It was just, it's what they did, right? And I obviously need to advocate for myself, but it wasn't a thought on their end. So by teaching more and more people, we're able to help them to feel comfortable knowing what's right or wrong. They might see that next rabbi and not even say, hey, is it okay if I shake your hand? They just won't, because they already know they don't have to.
And so you've been doing this for quite a while.
Yeah.
Has your content changed at all since the October 7 massacre?
Yes and no, because I, especially when it comes to Israel, I shared all about Israel before, and I'm really proud of that. Like, I've been to Israel many times in my life, and for me, even with all the psychopaths out there who are anti-Semitic as hell, I always shared my trips to Israel. People love when I go to Keep a Man on Ben Yehuda in Jerusalem. Like, oh, they love
Sorry,
it.
Where you go to?
Keep a Man.
Keep a Man.
Oh, have
Keep
you ever
a Man.
Been
yeah,
there?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because like, as an Israeli yeah. Jew, no, because that's a very American Jewish thing
it
to
is.
Do, to go to Ben Yehuda and go to those stores. But yeah.
But it's like a very famous, he's very famous. He's been around forever. And every time I go there, people lose their minds. They love it. And I've been going for so long. I remember like I made a video years and years ago. I'm still getting comments on it now about coffee. Because in Israel, if you ask for iced coffee, you're getting slushy. If you ask for a cafe car, you're going to get the right thing. You're going to get your latte. Right. So people just don't know that. And they go to Israel and they always get that slushy, which is delicious, right? We love our iced coffee, but it's, if you don't know what you're asking for, you're going to get the wrong thing. So I just made a video about it. I love it. I made videos about, you know, the money there, how it's different, about the train system. Like I love all those things and being able to teach people how to travel in Israel. But that video was made years ago and I still get comments on it. And the anti-Semitism has changed. It used to be a lot more just hating Jews or Holocaust jokes. And now it's basically all, you know, genocide and killers.
Go back a second. I'm sorry. And by the way, this is something that happens a lot in conversations between people that are online advocating or just speaking their mind and are publicly Jewish, is that the anti-Semitism is the background. And a lot of people don't even, you know, we don't even realize that it's there already because it's part of our lives. But you just mentioned, like, I make a video about different kinds of coffee in Israel and someone would comment a Holocaust joke?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is that exactly? I think a lot of people that are not in our world would be shocked by this.
Right. And it's almost and normal to us, which is terrible. I mean, not normal in a good way, but one really interesting thing that happened after October 7th, when more and more people started becoming advocates and more people didn't even realize that they were going to become voices, right? It just was, how do I not? Well, before that, anti-Semitism was still happening. And a lot of people just didn't realize it. You know, I was reading the book, you know, Zibi Owen's book on Jewish, on being Jewish now. Thank you. And I'm reading everybody's stories. And I actually struggled through a few of the stories because so many people just didn't have a voice before or didn't realize these things were happening before. Anti-Semitism was really bad before October 7th. It's gotten a lot worse since October 7th. But I remember in 2021, my niece was in Israel for the year and it was during COVID. It was just, everything was a mess. And Hamas was shooting rockets at Israel constantly. And things were very quiet. A lot of Jews said nothing. And I spoke up on it and I was on TikTok already and I definitely used my voice. I remember my niece made me a video giving her a tour of her room because her room was the bomb shelter. Because in Israel, people's bedrooms, children's rooms, the living room, those are your bomb shelters. And even back then, people were like, well, you know, they were making all their comments about Israel and things like that. But it's just always been there. It happens to be that it used to be that people's anti-Semitism came in the form of Holocaust jokes. It still is there. Like I get a lot of comments. Hitler was right. 6 million wasn't enough. All those kinds of things, but not as much as I used to. Now I get more, you know, like baby killer kinds of comments and genocide and all those kinds of things about Israel. But the Hitler jokes are still there.
What does it say about our world, our society, that someone whose most of her content is Jewish cooking gets baby killer comments? I mean, it's never acceptable. It's never okay. But, you know, when someone like me goes out and says something, you know, with force and I shout and we have very different content like, and people react negatively. It's, you know, it's not acceptable, but
it's expected.
It's expected, right? At least in our ecosystem of social media.
Yeah.
But you post a lot about
just regular Jewish life. It's interesting because, you know, a lot of my content is Israel-based or just proud Jew-based. And so when people come to me and say all the Israel things, I'm not surprised either because even though I'm not, I don't know, I am an Israel advocate, but I put myself more as a Jewish advocate if I were to put a word on it. Like, although I have trouble putting any word on what I do, but it's almost become expected for all of us. Like the TikTok community of Jews has grown and grown and grown. And people make videos about it daily that they'll never share anything about Israel and still get the Israel comments. That bothers me more than on my account where I literally have an Israeli flag in my bio because I want to make sure everybody knows that I'm not just, I mean, it's okay to just be a Jew, but I am also someone who is proud, not just to be Jewish, but to have Israel as our Jewish homeland because I believe the two go hand in hand.
break that down for me. Why? You were born and raised in Seattle?
Born and raised in Seattle. So my grandmother, my Safta, was actually born in Israel. And I believe even if she wasn't born there, that I would still love Israel the same. I didn't grow up a Zionist. I grew up always liking Israel, like I've been many times in my life, but I wasn't as connected to it, like biblically even. That for me is a lot of my connection to the land, is the biblical history. Like that's why I love Jerusalem so much. Oh my gosh, I love it so much, because every step you take, you are walking on history. Like when you're driving through and you're like, our ancestors were there. Like the things that they did when you're at Ir David and you're literally standing where King David was and you're hearing the history, to me, it like blows my mind. Every time you like dig something up and you're like holding an old coin, thousands of years of our history there. Even if you're not religious, our biblical history is so cool to me. But my grandmother was born there in 1924. Her family came from Poland, and they came from Poland. They came in 1904, maybe 1905, somewhere in that range. They built a community in the Tel Aviv area. So they've been, what was it called? Batei Warshaw. Because they came from Warsaw, and they wanted to create a community where people who are coming from Warsaw would feel safe. Eventually they left because of the Arab riots. So for me, I'm always connected to the land because my grandmother's passport was an Eretz Yisrael Palestinian passport. She was from there. So I'm always like very connected to it, but it's also from my family, you know, and there's so much connection that we have. I mean, we are as safe as we are because of Israel.
You have two teenagers.
I do.
Are they as connected to Israel as you are?
Probably not. No, not yet. I would say I don't force anything on them. My son's still back and forth if he's going to go for the year or not, and we'll never push him in any direction. It's whatever he wants. But he's went for the summer last year. He's going again this year. My daughter will definitely want to go. She already talks about her seminary year, and she's just finishing her freshman year now. So she's very excited about it. They love Israel. Are they like super hardcore Zionists? I don't know yet. Like they're still young. And I think it's important for teenagers to be connected to the land. But I don't think every teenager, when they're still figuring out their brains, needs to like, you know, some already know they're going to live in Israel when they're older. And some don't. But they do love Israel and they love visiting.
To be fair, when you're 17, you're not supposed to know anything.
Truth. But, yeah.
Although if you ask me when I was 17, I would tell you that I know everything. But yeah, you're supposed to figure things out.
Yeah. And that's what I love about them going to visit is I'm not forcing anything on them. I don't live in Israel and I'm not planning to move there anytime soon. So I never say never to anything, right? Like who knows where my future will lead, but it's not in our plans. My husband and I have no plans for now to live in Israel. So I don't expect my kids to. If they wanted to, go ahead. My nephew just made Aliyah. He went to college in Israel. We're so proud of him. Like our whole family is the first in our family to do that. And shout out to Jonah Hoffman. He's awesome. He also posts on social media. He's a big Zionist and he just loves being able to share. But if it's what they want, I would fully support them.
What about their Jewish identity?
They're very proud Jews. They are. I mean, they're not posting on social media about it. I wouldn't want them to at this age anyways.
That's not the metric for being a proud anything.
Truth.
Right? It doesn't matter, Jew or gay or lesbian, trans, bi, African American, Asian American, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like if you don't post on social media, then you're not proud.
True. Right? You just have to be proud of who you are. So both of my kids are very proud Jews, very. And they're both, I mean, this is how I grew up too. I grew up modern Orthodox. I grew up always being able to ask. I grew up, you know, making my own choices within reason. Like we were raised with certain values. And then you get into adulthood and my kids already know, like whatever choices you make, they're going to be your choices to make. When you live under my roof, we have rules. But the rules aren't forced on them. It's taught to them. So we have our Jewish values and we're really proud of those. And for now, our kids really are totally into it.
What would you say are your family Jewish values?
I guess it's funny. To me, it's asking questions. It's following the laws, following in the Torah, you know, praying and going to synagogue and following Shabbos and keeping kosher and learning and asking questions. You know, they go to school every day and I'm like, don't forget to ask questions and challenge your teachers. When I hear of teachers who are like, stuff it down people's throats and make everything about fear, I'm not down for that. We are meant to be in awe of God. We are not meant to fear God. You know, we use English words that aren't really meant to ever be used in Hebrew. And our original language is Hebrew. And it's like, the fear is not what I believe in. I believe in awe of God and of our future, but we also don't live for the next life. We live for this one.
By the way, and I, as someone who does not believe in God, mm-hmm. still can make that same kind of parallel of we're supposed to be in awe of our parents yeah. or our grandparents, our history, our ancestors,
the world,
our culture. We're not supposed to fear it. We're yeah. not supposed to do it. And in fact, one of the things that keep coming up in things you talk about and you write about this on your website is the word fear itself.
I do love the word fear. Isn't that funny that it's like the opposite? Because it's not the word fear that I love. It's fear actually holds people back. It's false evidence appearing real are the four words for fear. And it's when you...
Wait, let's...
I'm going to do it again. So fear is false evidence appearing real.
It's what does that mean?
When we imagine all the future possibilities of what could happen, but in a negative way. All those bad things that could happen are what stops people from actually doing things. It literally holds them back. And not just people with anxiety, right? Because anxiety can hold people back as well. But it's you start picturing all the stuff that could happen. And I'm not talking about jumping out of an airplane. Like, cool. I understand you can go splat. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. But even little things like committing to a plan because you want, I don't know, you want to start a business. And you're like, or even a smaller example, I always use this one online of folding laundry. Because there are people who get very overwhelmed by laundry folding and it builds up and it builds up. And what do? They people want to say, oh, I'm going to commit to 3 months of folding my laundry every single day. But then they start thinking, well, what happens if I forget? What happens if I go on vacation? What happens if, it's all what happens. And they never actually commit to even the smallest things because they're thinking about the failure that's going to happen. But my rule is if there's negative what ifs, there's also going to be positive what ifs. So that's what I focus on. I'm like, yeah, you could fail, but you could also succeed. So why would you go the failure route? And also failure never really is failure. Like you could fail at something and then you're still in a better place than you were before you started. So you're not starting back from the beginning. You're starting from a new place. Just do it again. And now you know the ways not to do it, right? So it's thinking about if you're going to do what if, think about all the good what ifs that could happen.
Have you felt fear, false evidence appearing real, holding you back?
I think it holds everybody back. I am I'm not an overthinker in a negative way. I'm like I look at everything that could happen in a positive way. Like I'm very aware of every emotion that I have. I'm very aware of every conversation that I have. And so I'm always, if I see that fear is holding me back, I will actually push myself to question why. Right? If I'm feeling jealousy towards someone, because who the heck doesn't feel jealousy? If anybody doesn't, they're lying. That's it. But I will ask myself why. What am I seeing in that other person that's making me feel jealous? I question everything because that's how you get through it. Right? And people will sit and gossip about other people. And I'm like, well, why? Because gossip happens. We all do it. It's okay. But why am I gossiping about that person? What is it about that person? Or what is it about me that's making me feel like I need to gossip about that? And why are they taking up so much space in my head? Because never about them. I mean, some people are just not good people, but they're also really good people. And I look at their life and maybe it's just that I want what they have. So then instead of being jealous of them, the question becomes, well, how do I get what they have? So it's just a shift in your thinking. So of course I feel fear, but I will then push myself to ask all of those things. What am I afraid of? And then I'll push myself to think of how it could go better. I just do things. Like even when I started my blog in 2011, my friend was like, you should start a food blog. And I'm like, okay, you should get on TikTok. Okay. Like maybe I don't always think of the consequences of doing certain things, but I know that I can always stop. If food blogging didn't work out and nobody watched my videos, what's the worst that would happen? I would feel a little embarrassed that I started something I couldn't finish. Sure. Then move on, do something else. But look what happened. I started a food blog. Nobody was even watching. My pictures were horrendous. Horrendous. My writing was horrendous.
Do you remember the first thing you posted?
Oh, God, it's really bad. It's really, really bad. Well, I started with a Facebook page. That's kind of how it was. And I was posting in this album. It started with durian. Do you know what durian is? The fruit?
The fruit, yeah.
The stinky fruit. It started with that. Because I had been watching, you know, Andrew Zimmern, who now posts all these negative things about Israel. But at the time, I thought he was amazing. And he would travel the world and he would eat all these crazy things, which is my dream of just being able to try everything. I keep kosher, so I can't. But there are many things I can try. Durian's kosher. Not a fan. But I'm glad I tried it. Like, it's so cool that I got to try it. It just wasn't, it wasn't for me. And that's okay. But I made a cake. And it was like this flat. It did not work out. And then I stuffed gushers into meatballs. Don't do that. Don't do it. Even making cake pops for the first time. I love trying things as they're becoming, like before they're trendy. So a lot of my recipes, like making rainbow cake for the first time. That was my first viral recipe. I made a Martha Stewart rainbow cake, but I made it parve. I made it dairy-free. So all the religious Jews were all over it. And that's kind of actually the first recipe that went viral.
You got religious Jews to make a rainbow cake.
Oh, heck yeah. I got a lot of rainbow
stuff.
And
we should say we are recording this during Pride Month.
Oh, yeah. And I even have like rainbow. My rainbow hamantaschen are one of my most popular recipes. I put them in my cookbook because I had to. They are so complicated to make. They are so incredibly unhealthy. And it's a choice you make to make. I mean, they're literally full of like every dye and everything on the planet. But there, when I made them, they were I had like the gay community obsessed with them. Like the Jewish gay community was like making them like crazy. I hope they still do, because you got to have like that little mix when you love rainbows. Now, I think rainbows are a Jewish thing. I mean, they're very much a biblical thing.
Wait, what do you mean?
Rainbows are biblical. Think
about
Noah.
Referring to Noah's?
Of course. Yeah. Rainbows are like original. We're going back to, I mean, that's even more biblical. That's not just about Jews. That's about everybody. But I just love rainbows. I do. So for me, it was like fun to see everybody making something rainbow. And it wasn't about any community. It was just because rainbows are awesome. But it was dairy free. So they all went nuts over it.
So let's talk about your book.
Yeah.
First of all, before we delve to the book itself, and let me, you want to show it to the camera? It's
called, where's the camera? Right there. I'm like, I have no idea where the camera is.
Eat Jewish, over 100 recipes that blend Jewish heritage, modern flavors, and family traditions.
That's right.
What took you so long to write a book? I've been doing this for so long. And
I never had a vision for a really long, I would say my entire food blogging career when I was only food blogging, I never really had direction. Anything that I thought of making, I made it. There was no like one answer for anything. There was no, I don't know, what's the word? Like there was no theme. I was just blogging. And even with TikTok, I mean, clearly it took years, right, for me to do anything. My daughter's what inspired the book, because I would make, and my followers actually are really what inspired it. I would make roasted broccoli, literally just roasted broccoli. And we call it, like, my followers started calling it Nora's broccoli, because I would say the only thing Nora eats is broccoli. And I would make it every single Shabbos. Like I would make it on Friday, and every single week for, I can't even tell you how many years now, I make a video every single Friday what I made for Shabbos. If I don't make anything for Shabbos, I make a video how I didn't make anything for Shabbos. Like if I'm on a cruise or I'm by my parents, whatever it is. And one time I just was like, what if I just share? What if I want to write a book? And I was making Nora's broccoli, and I said in the video, one day, if I ever have a cookbook, I'll put this in it. Just throwing it out there to the universe, like what would happen? And this woman messages me and she's like, I have a friend who's an agent. I looked her up. She was legit. You know, it wasn't like some random person, but she was a random follower on TikTok. We started connecting on Instagram. She introduced me to this agent friend of hers. He's amazing. Shout out to Joe. And that was it. And as much as I want to be like, it was that easy. I mean, clearly it took so many years for me to get to the point of knowing that I could do it and actually having a vision.
So what's the vision for the book?
So it feels like an extension of my TikTok, extension of my education that I do, because this book isn't just recipes. It's Jewish education. It's, you know, the entire back of the book has like every single Jewish holiday, what it's all about. Every chapter has the Hebrew and the transliteration so that you can learn some Hebrew words, but it's just teaching people more about our Jewish food. So if you're Jewish and you've never tried this food before, try it. Learn something about it. Learn the history of it. If you're not Jewish, I want you to make Jewish food. I want you to feel comfortable making Jewish food. And especially because people like to learn the origins, they're going to get it here. So you're going to make challah, but you're going to learn some really interesting facts about challah. You're going to learn why you braid it. You're going to learn a little bit of the history of why we do it. You know, there's latkes, why we make latkes, why even, you know, kosher pickles. Because people get very confused about kosher salt and also the history of pickles, because Jews have a very long history with pickles, the Ashkenazi community, which I think is so awesome. Or the slow cooker was invented by a Jew, literally for cholent. That's why you're welcome to everybody who uses a slow cooker. It's all because of cholent.
And a lot of people will now be Googling cholent.
I hope so. There's one in the book.
Yeah. What is cholent?
Cholent is, I call it a Jewish stew. Because Cholent is actually something that I find spans between so many different types of Jews. There's Sephardic Cholents, there's Ashkenazic Cholents, there's so many different types. And even there's a Moroccan Cholent that is so spicy and delicious. People put eggs in their Cholent. There's a million ways to make them. And not everybody, I don't know if everybody calls it Cholent. Chameen is another one. So there's a lot of different versions of it. And yeah, it's in the book, which is super fun. Like, do I think everyone in the world is going to start making Cholent? We'll see. We'll see. But it's just a way of teaching people about, and it's not just Ashkenazic food. I'm Ashkenazic. My family is Russian, Hungarian, and Polish. My food is Ashkenazic. I'm an Ashki to the end of time. But I grew up in a community in Seattle with a lot of Turkish Jews and Greek Jews. So there's a lot of that in the book as well. I had someone say to me, I don't need another potato kugel recipe. I was like, then don't make it. I have a whole kugel section, by the way, in here. But I was like, don't make it. But have you ever heard of, you know, Turkish burekas? Have you ever had a boyiku before? Like all these different things that they've never heard of. Like, don't think of this book as I've already made everything in there. My softa made everything in there. Maybe she's made a few of these things. My Passover bagels that are in here that are made with matzah meal. It's like a joke with every, like so many Ashkenazic Jewish women. We all have the same recipe. All of our softas made it. So it's in there. And you probably have the same one, but there's a lot of people who've never made it. I love matzah meal. If my belly could handle it, I'd eat it all the time. But it can't, so I don't.
So let's talk a bit about the recipes. What's your favorite thing to make?
Oof, the oxtail soup. Yeah, it's actually a slow cooker recipe. I grew up in Seattle across the street from my grandparents. And my softa would make this all the time. She called it kitchen sink soup. So it's whatever the heck you have, you throw it in. I don't call it that in the book. My husband he hates the word kitchen sink for like cookies for anything. So it's the oxtail soup. And you can make it with regular meat. You don't need oxtail for it, but the oxtail is really delicious if you can get your hands on it. It's so good.
What is the most, what is your favorite Jewish thing to eat but not make?
Ooh, I mean, not make?
Yeah, to have made for you.
Well, I was just thinking about a certain type of challah and I'm forgetting the name. It's Yemenite ukubane.
Oh, kubane.
Kubane, it's so good. We get it in our neighborhood. There's a store called Geffen Gourmet and they make, they're owned by, I think one of them's Yemenite and Israeli. I'm not sure what their backgrounds are, the owners. And they make amazing kubane. Dairy-free, because I've had dairy kubane. Holy crap. It's amazing. Literally, your hands are covered in butter. This is dairy-free, and we have it as many Shabbases as we can because it's that good. I never want to make it myself. I don't. Like, just make it for me, and I'll keep eating it.
What's your favorite recipe to make for a non-Jewish person who's never had any Jewish food?
Kugel. I love kugel. Like, a potato kugel is my sister in Seattle tested.
Can you explain to people what is kugel?
So kugel is casserole. It's a Yiddish word. I actually just learned the origins and I'm not remembering them now. And that's okay. But
it's in the book.
It's in the book. And it's kugel is a casserole. And there are everybody. I mean, what is the Sephardic word for kugel? There is another word for it. And I'm forgetting it. Kujato is, it's not Turkish. It's Ladino. It's Ladino. Thank you. And it's, basically casserole or kugel. It's all kind of the same thing and they're different ingredients. So I have that whole chapter in there. But my sister tested my potato kugel recipe and she's like, you know, I'm having some friends over that aren't Jewish. It was their first time having kugel and they loved it. It's literally just like a big latke, right? It's just shredded potatoes and eggs and oil and it's so good. It's got to be one of my favorite things.
Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Savory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very. I like some pepper in there. I did not put in my book, maybe one day in the second one, when.
Putting it out there.
Yerushalmi kugel is one of my favorites. I couldn't get it right for the book. And I was so tired the night I was testing it. And I was like, you know what? We'll save it for the next one. But I like my Yerushalmi kugel. It's sweet and savory. So a lot of pepper and a lot of brown sugar. Oh, it's so
You already mentioned that your daughter, the one thing she'll eat is the roasted broccoli. What is your favorite thing to make for a reluctant teenager?
Well, thank God they eat everything now. Like really, almost everything. Nora doesn't like Brussels sprouts right now. She probably will one day, but she tries everything. As teenagers, they eat everything. When they were younger, my son's actually a foodie. He's always eaten everything. Always. My daughter was a lot pickier. That's where the roasted broccoli came from. And it's one of those things that I'll get comments from people who are like, my kid's eating vegetables again. Because people steam broccoli. And I'm like, why are you doing that? There's nothing to it. Like, you roast it, even just roasting it, you don't need to put it on a flame. Just throw it in the oven with olive oil and spices. And people are actually making and eating broccoli. So that to me, and that's how the book started, was with that one recipe. But when kids are reluctant, I'm like, just roast it.
So I do have to say one thing, a lot of times Jewish food, especially Ashkenazi Jewish food, gets a bad rap.
Yeah, it does.
How would you defend that, if at all?
Well, first of all, we have a lot of brown food, and I'm not going to lie about it. Like, it makes me laugh when I look at my Shabbos table and there's so much brown. The broccoli is not, but like, if you're making a kugel, unless it's like with fresh broccoli, it tends to go a little bit dark. So we have a lot of brown food, but just add salt. Like, okay, so add more than salt, but I just think it's delicious. You just have to add spices to it. If you make it, like, I know a lot of Hungarian food gets a bad rap for having like no flavor. I'm like, just add more spices. I have one recipe in here. They're these Turkish burekas, and they're just potato and cheese and salt, but there's not really a lot of other flavor in there. There's no caramelized onions. And one of my testers was like, they're just okay. They need onions. I'm like, I'm not going to stray from how they're made. They're heavenly, but they're very simple. And I like simple. I love comfort food. But if you feel like there's something missing, add it. It's okay to add Sephardic Moroccan spices to Ashkenazi food if it feels too bland to you. It's true, though, that our Ashkenazi food does not have all of the spices that Moroccan food has, or, you know, any of the Middle Eastern foods that we eat. And some people don't like it. My mom hates pepper. She hates pepper so much, we can't add it to anything. So we're all like putting pepper on everything after the fact, because otherwise she can't eat it. If you don't like the food, just add more spices to it. But it's also okay. Like, don't be embarrassed if you have Ashkenazi taste buds. It's cool. It's how we grew up. We love potatoes.
Is there anything that you will never eat other than non-kosher?
Oh, well, I would start by saying I hate olives. I hate them so much. And it makes me sad because people say they're amazing every time I taste one. And I'll keep trying them because I'm like, maybe one day. No. Just can't do it. My husband actually tricked me into eating something with olives recently. And right away, I actually had it all on camera because I was making a video for something, and he wrote a little note like, taste this.
Olive oil?
No, I love olive oil. It was an olive dip.
Olives themselves, okay.
Oh, so gross. And I respect people for eating it. Like, I don't think it's gross for you. It's just,
I love how passionate you are about that.
Olives. But olive oil is wonderful. I could drink it if I wanted to. It's so good. Are there foods that I won't, like, so I don't get, you know, I only keep kosher, so I won't eat shellfish. I won't eat anything that isn't kosher. There are foods I want to eat, but my values are important to me. So like, even when we travel, we'll make sure, and people ask a lot about travel with kosher. I'm like, we do our research before. I'll go anywhere in the world. If I have to bring beef jerky and bread and peanut butter, I'll do it. I went to Iceland with my husband and there was nothing kosher for us to eat. We brought everything with us. I'll eat wraps for a week. What do I care? If I get to travel the world, it's not all about the food. Food's important, but I'm not going to only go places that have kosher options. But I always do my research beforehand. If they're kosher restaurants, I'm there. And I tell people, oh my God, people go to Seattle and they forget that there's so little kosher food there. And my sister's a caterer there, and they'll call her like the day they land. Hey, can we get food? She's like, no. Like, if you called me a month ago, I could make a plan. I could buy all the food. I could do all that. But people forget that outside, especially New Yorkers or like tri-state area-ers, or in-towners, forget that outside of our world, it's not so simple. Yeah. And they forget. And thank God, I feel blessed that I'm from Seattle and that I could bring my kids to Seattle so they can see outside of New York. Because some of their friends, man, it's like in-town world, in-town mindset, you just forget that like life exists outside of the five towns.
Right. And that's part of why Jews tend to live in the same areas, because everything from food, from birth to death.
It's easy.
Right? It's everything needs to be around you, and there's not a lot of variety outside of it.
So we chose, like when we chose Long Island, it was because, well, my husband's job and his family, but the schools. So many school options. It's incredible. Like, even if I talk about school, I'm like, no one will ever figure out where my kids go because there's 500 schools in my neighborhood. There's 500 shuls. There's 500 grocery stores that are fully kosher. And every time I walk into one, my mind is blown. And I've been living here I've been living on Long Island for 15 years. And every time I walk in to ColeSave, which is where I do my shopping, I'm like, wow, still.
Well, I can ask you a lot more questions yeah. about your food, but I actually just want to taste it.
I'm sorry that I did not bring anything. I did stay by a friend last night, so.
All right. We will yeah. have to have you again, but only if you bring us food.
With pleasure. I'll cater it for everyone. You could all have.
So we're going to end with the Here I Am lightning round.
Okay. I'm so bad at these.
A series of rapid fire questions. There's no right or wrong answers. Okay. Just come up with the first thing that comes to mind. Melinda Strauss, what is one thing people don't know about you?
That's really, it's tough because I tell people everything. I stole once in high school from a store. It was Claire's. Yeah. I had a friend who was like, you got to steal things. And I thought it was really cool. Don't do that, kids. Don't steal anything. You'll get caught. But I did. I stole, like it was like cheap little jewelry. Not that it's okay, but I did steal. And it felt really good.
One of the Ten Commandments.
I know. Yeah. Listen, it happened. But what do? You move on. You keep going. You do better.
Yeah. That's it. What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
One thing that people don't know about the Jews? Oh, we are not the chosen people. We chose this. We were given the option. God gave the option to accept the laws to many different worlds, to many different peoples. And the Jews were the ones that chose to say yes. We do not think we are better than anyone else.
What is your favorite curse?
I don't know that I could say it.
Well, you can say anything, but it's okay. up to you.
Well, I'm...
Any language as well.
Oh, so really English. Can I say them?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I do love to say fuck. Like, it just happens a lot, especially if I, like, stub my toe. That's how I knew I broke it, because I said it so many times. But I will admit the C word is my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
When was the last time you cried?
I couldn't even tell you. Probably watching a TikTok of like a soldier coming home to their dog. That would get me every time. But it's not like real life things where I cry. When both my grandparents passed away, I was comforting my husband. I was like, it's gonna be okay. They lived a beautiful life. But yeah, probably a dog and a soldier. Oh, those get me every time.
This is gonna be interesting for you. If you could have any Jewish person over for a Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, dead or living, who would that be?
What Jewish person? Golda. Golda Meir would be so cool. Yeah, she'd be amazing. I have so many questions.
What would you ask her?
I've never even thought about what I would ask her, to be honest with you. You know, I would ask her, because there's so many quotes that come from her, and she talked about being Palestinian. Like, so I'd love to talk with her more about her mindset on being Palestinian because of when she lived there and all that kind of stuff, because those quotes get taken out of context a lot.
What is your favorite Jewish holiday?
Hanukkah.
What is your least favorite Jewish holiday?
Pesach. I know people love Pesach. It's not my favorite.
When do you feel safest?
In Israel.
When do you feel least safe?
Walking around New York City. Oh, it's some parts of Brooklyn too. Yeah.
What gives you hope?
People, positive comments, Jews, non-Jews alike. There's so much negativity, but the positive comments outweigh it a million. It's how I keep going. Because even though there's hate, the love is unbelievable. That gives me hope every day.
Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel, the Jewish diaspora, or the world in general. Where would you want the audience to donate to this week?
Leket. Leket Israel.
Leket. Mm-hmm. L-E-K-E-T. Mm-hmm. What do they do?
They provide food to people all over Israel. And one thing I love that they do is they rescue food. That's the concept of it. So much food gets thrown out. It drives me crazy, right? Like old tomatoes that are still good. They rescue food from farms from all over Israel, and they pack it up and they ship it out to people who need it. Yeah.
Melinda Strauss, where can people find you?
Oh, everywhere. Oh my gosh. I'm at The Real Melinda Strauss on TikTok and Instagram. I do post a little on YouTube if you're a YouTuber. That's cool too. MelindaStrauss.com is my website. And that's where, like, if you're never sure where to find something, I also have all my favorite YA fantasy books and new adult fantasy books. I like them spicy, guys. All that. I have a whole list of that on my website. And then I have information about my book as well.
Where can people find your book?
On Amazon and Target and Barnes & Noble. If you're someone who wants to sell my book, reach out, because I want it to be sold everywhere. I've been telling everybody who has like online websites, everything, that they can sell it as well. But those are the main ones if somebody wants to just like order. But if they want from their local, I love local bookstores. Like a good indie bookstore, if I can support them, that makes me the happiest. So like if you have an indie and you want to sell the book so that I can support it, that's so good.
I love it. And I think the lesson from this episode is you don't have to be Jewish to eat Jewish.
Truth. Well done. That's so good.
You can use that.
I'm stealing that one.
I am really happy that you came here. Not as happy as I would have been if you brought some food with you. But we got to keep some for next time.
Yeah, it's good. I'll make cookies.
And I'm just really grateful and excited to say, here I am with Melinda Strauss.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, here I am.